This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to the show that's all about getting to behind the headlines, getting to the stories behind the headlines. I'm Sharad Kutan, with me Tan Chung Han, and our guest, Joyce Goa, Senior Editor with The Edge Weekly. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Joyce.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. It's the start of a new week.
Yes.
An exciting five-day week. Though in Sarawak, if you lived in Sarawak, you'd only be a three-day week because on Thursday and Friday, you get a day off for Gawa.
Yeah, well, maybe you should move over.
Maybe you should move over. I think so. I think, you know, BFM in Borneo would be great. Borneo. I mean,
who doesn't want...
Right, Borneo FM.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want a three, you know, four-day weekend? I think every weekend should be a three-day weekend. How about that?
I agree.
Yeah. I agree. Okay, so
vote me in for...
There's a consensus. Because in France today, they're trying to cut back on that... 40-hour week, which is actually has been stifling the economy there, hasn't it? And anyway, but that's yeah. not the topic for discussion today. We're going to be looking at TV and taxes. Joyce, you did an interview with Mita Prima's CEO, Datuk Kamal Khalid, about yes. where TV is going.
Mita Prima TV Network CEO, Datuk Kamal Khalid, spoke to us on... He was very frank. And very candid at the interview, he shared on how he thinks, because I asked him, you know, is TV still relevant, right? And he goes, no, but he was very frank.
No, yeah, but very relevant.
But how could you not be, right, in this day and age?
He says TV has to work harder to maintain its relevance. I mean, because changing landscape, what's happening in the, you know, in the backdrop and like competition rising with, you know, new people jumping into the... playing field.
Right. I mean, one clarification. I mean, you're still perhaps using the television
yes.
as an instrument,
yes.
but that's not what we mean when we talk about TV being relevant.
Yes.
We're talking about the content, how it's
yes.
programmed.
He shared that with me.
Yeah,
and, yes.
Right?
And how he feels content is, at the end of the day, he believes content is very important and local content is very important. So he says it has to be compelling content because we cannot take viewers for granted. They're a lot more sophisticated than, you know, you think they are. Especially in this day and age. So there's just so much choice available out there. And he shared with me the whole transition of what TV is.
Yeah,
and how it's become like TV content. And
right.
how they've also started like Tonton. And how they've started that. And,
so
OTT.
Online delivery
yes,
of
yes,
content.
Yes, that's their OTT. And actually they're the first... The OTT... I mean, Tonton is the first local video portal in Malaysia. It was started in 2010.
Mm.
Today, they actually have 6.8 million users.
Yeah, I think one of the things, because, you know, Han, I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong, is that in the past, you know, TV was really also an extension of how government wanted to shape society, right? And so you'd have all this mixed programming. Now people just live in their own hermetically sealed programming worlds, right? You see only what you want to
you
watch.
You can choose, yeah. Yeah, he says the loyalty that traditional broadcasters used to enjoy is a thing of the past. Today there are many channels competing for the same audience. So, you know, there's going to be a certain degree of fragmentation and the key thing for them is to understand their audience and to produce the content that they want.
And I think what I find really interesting from your article here, Joyce, is how the definition of TV has changed. Because so often when we talk about TV, we talk about the medium, right? The actual TV set. And I think Dato talks about, you know, how the family is together on a TV
yeah,
set and just, you know,
yeah.
expose themselves. You know, it's a one-way thing. You just let the box just feed you information and you just, you know, sit there passively, right? But now, in his view, the term TV means something very different, right, Joyce?
Yeah, he says it's changed to, is broadened to change to a bit more like television content. So television could be your favorite TV show, whether is it Angkasa, romantic drama, football match, or Game of Thrones. And you don't have to watch it on a TV set, right? You can watch it on your computer, laptop. So it's more of TV content.
Right, yeah, and yeah. that's how we use the term TV now. But, you know, as he then broadens that definition of TV, you know, but Joyce, as you mentioned earlier, that then runs into the risk of, you know, it just being video. And, you know, you got so many competitors, right? So it's not just, you know, the OTTs and the Netflixes and the, I think here it's Tim Sam, I think with the star. I think it's called Tim Sam, you know, so... As you broaden the definition of TV to make it more relevant, as he, you know, puts it, you know, at the same time, when you broaden it, you then expose yourself to the risks of more challenges, right, and more competition,
but I guess
right?
producing more content on their own, and I think local content is very popular in Malaysia.
But it's also a question of production values. You look at some of the big winners for Netflix. If you think of House of Cards, for instance, these are million-dollar budgets. I mean, they employ actors from the big screen, right, like Kevin Spacey and such. I mean, can local television, traditional television provide televisions provide that kind of high-quality content to compete with the likes of Netflix and those shows?
Well, I think, it all depends on the I think what Joy has pointed out is the audience, right? Because if you look at some of the wins, at least in terms of Media Prima Stable, they're not citing House of Cards. They're not citing all these big...
Yeah, but local content.
Exactly.
I think he mentioned like their Anugerah Juara Lagu reached close to 6 million viewers.
That's the award ceremony, isn't it?
But I mean, that kind of content, like local content, can garner like 6 million viewers.
Right.
I'm not so sure like House of Cards in Malaysia, I don't think that will be like 1 million.
Exactly. So another point of comparison is the football matches, right?
Right. Local football matches continue to outstrip the EPLs.
Yeah, I know, which is quite... I mean,
but it's a fact,
as a BPL
that's
fan.
A fact, yes.
And somebody from... He's a boy from Klang. You know, Joyce, I don't know if Hans ever mentioned this, but he's from Klang.
Right?
But he does not support any local football team. Shame on you.
Whoa, hold on.
Merah Kuning forever.
Why are you going to make me the scapegoat here? There are many Malaysians who are probably listening right now who probably hold no allegiance to a local football team. How
football
dare you, Shimon?
Matches, really, it's
exactly.
Like there are lots of viewers for that.
Yeah, you got the recent FA Cup final, which Kedah won as well. And you just see all the cars, driving around town on that weekend with their Kedah flags, flying around, despite it being here in Selangor. So, you have that element of localized content, which is still very much a pillar of Media Prima's offerings. I think that's
local content, I think, in Malaysia is still big.
Yeah,
I think that would be true anywhere,
that
right?
Still look at local content. I mean, the other media groups look at local content, I'm sure.
Yeah, because very often we forget, here in the urban space and us English-speaking, folk, because we then gravitate towards, like these House of Cards
I wasn't talking about so much about the product, but the investment.
Production value.
The production values and the investments in it. Basically, my question is, are they going to be shifting the way they budget? Are they going to be producing how much money are they going to put behind it?
Dato' Kamal admitted that it all boils down to content, right? But he says content cost is going up. So, you have to be judicious with the kind of content you air, and you have to be selective and where you park your investments. He did share that with us.
Right.
But content cost, I guess it really depends on what content it is, but I'm sure local content is still very popular in Malaysia.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the forex cost alone, let's say, the ringgit against the US dollar, if you're importing a lot of these programs from the States, just the forex cost alone will kill you, right? If let's say you've been signing up for seasons 1, 2, 3 of a certain show back when the ringgit was at 3.2, everything was hunky-dory. Now you're paying for the same show with the ringgit now at 4.3 against the US dollar, right? So that's going to be, a massive, a hit to your bottom line there. So Media Prima, at least, they still have that concerted push with localized programming versus, say, again, Astro, right? They're bringing a lot more foreign content. They're relying on the Premier League, and so having the rights to air those Premier League games have also gone up as well due to the bidding process.
Yes.
So, these are the kind of pressures that local broadcasters have to contend with.
Yeah, but just to drive home the fact on local content, I attended Wild Digital Conference last week, and the iFlix boss, one of the top guys there, gave us a talk on iFlix, and he mentioned that local content here is important in Malaysia, and they're realizing that now.
And just one more shameless plug here. We here on The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9's Morning Run, we are set to have a grill with the CEO of Media Prima Digital. Yes, Joyce, I know you've spoken to him several times before, but this is our turn to promote and trumpet our stuff.
Age first. When's that?
So that's coming. Good question, Joyce. I'm glad you asked. So it's slated for sometime this week, possibly Wednesday. Stay tuned. Breakfast Grill every weekday at 8 a.m.
Okay, we'll be back with more on BFM 89.9. Good morning. Welcome back to Pressing Matters, the show where we look at the stories behind the headlines. We have as our guest Joyce Goh, senior editor with The Edge Weekly. Of course, I'm sure I could in with me, Tan Chung Han. It's time to talk about taxes.
Yes.
And because it's tax season for many of us, there are different categories and people have different deadlines depending on what you're working at, whether it's personal or it's corporate. Joyce, what is the main conversation going on now about tax and taxes? Is it about the IRB? Is it about its aggressive stance towards tax avoidance, evasion, non-filing, and whatnot?
Yeah, I think recently there has been quite a number, I mean like three high-profile cases that came to light in just a span of weeks. Mm-hmm. That involved a total sum of about 579 million ringgit worth of taxes that they're looking into. So, I mean, tax is something that is, I mean, it's there. It's a reality that all of us have to face. But I think recently this, when all these cases started coming up, everyone's talking about it, like what's happening and all that, right? So we, and what are businesses supposed to do if, you know, a tax audit or investigation happens? And we also wrote to the IRB to ask them, like, what's happening. And they came back with good answers. I think you can read that in our this week's cover story. Cindy wrote to IRB's Dato' Sabin Samita.
Yeah, so you're trying to plug the edge now after... on our platform. But yeah. Okay, never mind. Go ahead.
Oh, wow.
But no, I mean, just to share with this cover story on... Because what's happening, you know, taxes... And it's a reality. And we spoke to tax consultants on their view on what's happening on the ground and why is all this happening. There's a crackdown, but it's not only in Malaysia. It's a worldwide crackdown on people who evade tax. I think we forget that technology and digitalization has helped. I mean, it's not just, we're not talking about new economies like Grab, Airbnb that just use tech. Like tax consultants shared with us that IRB now has so much data on us. Mm. You know, with self-assessment and you do your e-filing, you just plug all the data in there and they can just zoom in, they can take out data, they can look at trends. Mm. So it's all these things that they can use to, because we asked them why suddenly this influx of what's happening, and they say actually they got a lot of data already. It's a matter of taking out and looking at the trends and all that, you know?
Right, but then looking at the article here, you know, you've got this interesting segment about how, which explains why this is happening. This being that more aggressive stance by the IRB, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, and apparently you've got a quote here from the EY Malaysia tax leader Amarjit Singh, is that
yes.
right?
Yeah.
So why is this happening?
Which one? This one is on the increase in tax controversies, that is tax audit and investigations and tax litigation, is not surprising, he says, because this is in line with the global trend. Mm. But in January, the Inland Revenue Board, he shared with us that the IRB announced that it aims to collect 127 billion in direct taxes this year.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah. And that's amazing. You know, as I was reading your story, the first thing that came to mind, you know, I just pictured all these tax partners at all the big four audit firms in Malaysia going and rubbing their hands. Yeah, baby, what's up? Pick up that phone, call me, people.
You know, I mean, I do want to say that, you know, there are a lot of Malaysians who have a somewhat conspiratorial turn of mind. And they, when they look at these headlines, they're saying to themselves, oh, the government's going after everybody because they're running out of money. And, you know, it's that kind of thinking. I mean, where do we place that kind of thinking
within
the explanation?
I think there's that view, but if you look at it, it's a global thing. Like, for example, as in there's a global crackdown on tax evasion. Like, for example, recently, international oil giant Chevron revealed that they're facing a second and separate audit in Australia over their financial affairs. And this was, the federal court there decided last month in April that Chevron could be liable for more than 300 million in unpaid taxes related to intercompany loans. I mean, it's happening. It's yeah, it just depends on. I mean, like when we spoke to the tax consultants, Ong Chong Chi, he's executive director of Advent MS Tax Consultants, and he shares that yes, I mean there are people who try and companies who try and come up with structures to perhaps
avoid taxes.
Yeah. But there's also people who are genuinely, when they file their tax returns, because now everything is self-assessment. Hmm. So you file your taxes and say how much you've earned and how much you should pay taxes. And the IRB will tax. I mean, sometimes they might audit you, or they might just to make sure that you are compliant. Mm. So sometimes there may be errors in your tax filing, but like he says, it could be an accounting error or just differences in interpretations and perceptions. Because tax is very technical.
Right. So it's not always a case of, you know, these entities, these corporates intentionally, again, it's not the intent to then avoid paying taxes. It's just that because of the evolving technologies, because of the evolving trends in the way goods and services are billed for, you know, it's also due to the technologies that are more prevalent right now. It seems like there is a regulatory component to it, right? And I believe this was covered in your article as well, whereby, you know, perhaps there has to be more discussion between the IRB and stakeholders, you know, in terms of trying to, you know, go after these so-called aggressive companies who observe these so-called aggressive tax planning. Right?
Yes, okay,
go ahead.
No, yeah. And I think PwC's tax leader, Jack Diff, also announced that, he shared with us about how he feels like in the rapidly changing landscape, tax authorities would need to work closely with taxpayers to understand the types of business transactions and activities and provide clear guidance upfront of what is acceptable. So this would reduce the number of disputes. Because, you know, like businesses change, landscape change, you know, so many things change. So it's very good if there's a lot of communication between the everybody, the stakeholders at hand. And when we ask them what the tax consultants, what are the things that IRB is looking at, I think we drew up a potential aggressive tax planning restructuring example. We have that in our article this week. And Deloitte's Chow Kok Sing, business tax audit and investigation leader at Deloitte Malaysia, shared that one of the things that IRB is looking at is investment holding companies with extensive intercompany transactions and companies with huge amounts to be refunded are targets as well.
I mean, just to the question of intention, whether companies deliberately intend to avoid taxes, I have only one word with three syllables, Panama, as in Panama Papers, which actually revealed how much and how systematic tax avoidance is globally.
But if you have the legal, you know, avenues of doing so, no, then it's fine. No, but no, I guess
substance over form, lah. Mm. It's the intent. Mm. That's why it comes down, it's subjective, but it also comes down to substance and what is your whole intent of coming up with that structure.
Right.
This company structure, intercompany structure, is it for business or is it to avoid tax?
I mean, no company wants to go out and say, you know, yeah, I'll give more tax than necessary, right? If there's a legal avenue for them to, you know, pay fewer or less in taxes, then they will, right? So now the question that the IRB and the broader business community here in Malaysia is, you know, how do you define aggressive tax planning, you know, and should there be more communication? Because, you know, like some of these these tax leaders here in Malaysia have commented in your article, you know, there has to be that engagement, right? But I think also what's interesting is apparently there's a time bar element to it. And because some of those high-profile cases that you just cited a few minutes ago, that's MK Land, Magnum, and also Country Heights, these date back to, like, what, 10, 20 years?
Yeah.
And what I found interesting in your article was that apparently the time bar is usually about 5 to 7 years. Is that right?
Yes, 5 years. And transfer pricing is 7 years.
Hmm.
So yeah, I mean, we spoke to the tax consultants on this, and they say technically, I think Ong mentioned that technically a time bar should only be lifted when you can prove things like there's fraud, negligence, or willful evasion. But Armanjit says that if the IRB lifts the time bar on these grounds, they must have evidence to support its contentions, because time bars cannot simply be disregarded.
So, right. For corporates, or is it also true of individuals?
I think overall. Yeah, okay. I think overall.
But we don't engage in transfer pricing as individuals, do we?
No, but time bar for our taxes, because it's self-assessment. So when it comes to self-assessment system, we file our taxes and we say this is how much we earn. But then again, the IRB has their right to audit us. We cited a refund, because another thing that came up was, what if IRB already refunded you the money and then they come in and they say, hey, actually, you owe us more money. You know, you have to give us back the refund. And we cited a letter to taxpayers following a refund. And IRB said that IRB has given priority to your refund. However, the IRB can still undertake further checks and audit documents to validate your claims.
And this is for a company, I must say.
This is for an individual.
Yeah. You know, what's very interesting about the Tan Sri Lee Kim Yew story is that he says in it that, you know, in that letter that was leaked to everybody, he says, paying taxes is a patriotic duty and it's something that he has never shirked. And he felt really aggrieved in that letter. We still haven't heard the full story from him.
Yes,
about
I think
that.
this, yeah, Yeah.
Well, that's got to be a contrarian view, though. Now, again, I wonder how many people in the business community see this as a a way of expressing your national responsibility and national pride. You pay more taxes. I mean, but hey, you know, if you want to do it, go for it. No?
Well, it's a curious statement, but we've run out of time. We'll see who gets to Tan Sri Lee Kim Yew first, whether it's the Edge Weekly or us at BFM. Okay, thank you so much for joining us. That was Joyce Goh, Senior Editor, The Edge Weekly, because Tan Chung Han and myself, Shaurya Kuddin. We're coming up to the news and after that, Enterprise on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.